It's August 30th, and this is Rabbi Adler Shearer.
Turn down the cell phones. I want to welcome three guests. My wife is here this morning, Mary, and her sister, my sister-in-law, and her husband, Betty and Steven Nissenfeld, who are located in Yerushalayim and temporarily in Hollywood, Queens. So therefore, no family jokes today. There goes the shear. Okay, we will announce a permanent topic for the learning after Sukkot, but in the meantime, until the Chagim, we will deal with issues of the Chagim. And to that end, specifically talk about the minhag, the custom that's prevalent in the month of Elul, of blowing shofar in the morning. What is this all about? I myself am not the Baal Tokeya in my shul, but I do blow for the month of Elul. It's just it's no big deal. Many other people are capable of blowing.
I hear you every morning.
What? All right, we have somebody who hears me every morning. So I see it, to use the baseball language, it's something like spring training. At the beginning, after Rosh Chodesh, you know, it's still a little bit wavering and a little rusty, but as the month progresses, you see the sounds are coming out stronger and without the waverings and so on. You do get into the schwung, as we say, of blowing by doing it for the month of Elul. But let's see what this is all about and see what our Svardi brethren do as a perhaps alternate or different, similar but different minhag in the month of Elul. Taken from the top, very, very primary source here is the Tur. The Tur, as we know, is the forerunner of Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, who is the son of the Rosh, Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel, and the Rosh being a very, very known personality at the tail end of the medieval greats, the Rishonim, is because they printed the Rosh in the standard Gemaras. Now, there are many, many, many great people who wrote Svarim. Some of them are printed independently in Svarim. So some people who have, you know, Torah libraries. So you might have a Chidushei Ramban and a Rashba and a Ritva and a Ran. All these Svarim that are household names in the yeshiva. But a Rosh, everybody has, if you have a regular Shas Gemara, because you just flip at the very end of the Masechet, you have Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel. And that's like a big schut that he got on the page in the standard Gemara. And because of that, people know him. Now, I'll just say a word about the Rosh, because we're going to talk about his son. Was he Ashkenazi or Sephardi? This is a relevant point. It's not just incidental. Was he Ashkenazi or Sephardi? So everybody knows the Rosh is from Rav in Toledo. So Toledo, that's as Spain as you can get. Yet the Rosh is a Sion of Ashkenazi family and teaching. He's really a thoroughbred Ashkenazi, but he migrated to Spain. And he took a position in Toledo. And what's interesting is when you read his Navaleh, his Chidushim on the Gemara, printed in a standard Shas Gemara, it's almost taking off from the Balei HaTosafot. The Balei HaTosafot are all Ashkenazim. And this is Rabbeinu Tam, Rashi's grandson, and his colleagues and students and so on. Rashi Rabbeinu Tam is on the page of the Gemara, as you know. And how did that happen? Why didn't they put some Svardim on the page? And the answer is because they printed the Gemarot in Europe. And therefore, it was the Ashkenazi geniuses who, you know, led the pack of all the Rishonim, and that's why they're on the page. But some others were put in the back, and most of the Sephardim weren't printed at all. They either didn't have access to those manuscripts at all, or they just didn't print them because of lack of relevancy on the level of halacha lemaaseh. Why do we have to study it? It's not our tradition anyway. But the Rosh does make it into Ashkenazi copyists and then printings. And it's because he's fundamentally Ashkenazi, as he explains the Gemara. It's a takeoff of the Tosfot, almost sometimes expansion of. Yet when he moves to Toledo and becomes a Rav, he doesn't become a Rav like an Ashkenazi. He becomes a Rav like a Sephardi. So when you read his responsa literature, She'elot u'Tshuvot, you think you're reading the Chavadat of Rav Avad Yosef. It's a style. He was able to adapt himself to a completely different milieu, a completely different world of halakha, which is really fascinating, because this phenomenon took place in the United States as well with regard to the Syrian community. So today, the Syrian community, whether it's in Deal, New Jersey, or in the Ocean Parkway in Brooklyn, New York, so most of them already have Syrians themselves. They produce their own Talmidei Chachamim. But where did they produce their Talmidei Chachamim? At YU, at Yeshiva University, which is not exactly a Syrian bastion of study. But nevertheless, they have their home background of their minhagim, and so they serve. But before the young budding Talmidei Chachamim of the Syrian families became Rabbanim, who served as the rabbis of the Syrian community? Rabbi Zvulun Lieberman, Zichron Lebracha. I mean, Ashkenazim. And that's not. And Rabbi Lieberman, while he caught wind of the Sephardi minhag, was clearly Ashkenazi till the end of his life. Or perhaps even a more fascinating example is Rabbi Dr. Meir Soloveitchik. That's a grandson of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, who just recently, a few years ago, became rabbi of the Spanish Portuguese synagogue in Manhattan. And they appointed a tutor. He's got a tutor sitting next to him, coaching him. It's a coach. A Sephardi Minna coach, so he doesn't say anything dumb. I spoke to him once about this. He actually told me that, she said, that was his words, so I shouldn't say anything dumb. You know, you're the Rav of the shul, and they have their minhag, and he didn't grow up in that minhag. He grew up with Brisk and Volozhin minhag. So they wanted him anyway, because he's a sensational person, a gifted speaker, and a philosopher in the works. But in terms of minhag, he needed help till he gets
there. Political coach too.
Okay, political coach. I'm not talking about the politics here. But he needed a coach in terms of the minhag. That was very, very, very important. I remember I bumped into him once in September in O'Hare Airport in Chicago. I had finished up a weekend in one place. He was a speaker somewhere else, and we bumped into each other in the morning, and we wished each other, you know, Shana Tova. And he tells me, and the way we say it in our shul, this is the Spanish Portuguese synagogue, the way we say it in our shul, a good gesunte yor. Yeah, nobody in the Spanish Portuguese synagogue ever said a good gesunte yor. You know? He's the funniest, the Mayor Soloveitchik. But he represents a phenomenon. But I'll just go back 300 years to the last example, and of course it's the Chacham Tzvi. Chacham Tzvi, the Rav Tzvi Ashkenazi, his family name was not Ashkenazi, but he was the father of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, known as the Yavitz, Yud Ayin Bet Tzadik, Yavitz. And he, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, is the great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Senator Jake Javits. You know, and you have the Javits Center in Manhattan and so on. Closing the circle here, not far from the Spanish Portuguese Synagogue. But Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was a great Rav in Germany, as Yekka as they came, his father was imported to Amsterdam as the Rav of the Spanish Golim, the refugees from the expulsion from Spain in the late 15th century, 16th century. But they didn't have Rabbonim yet in Amsterdam of their own, so they imported Ashkenazim. So this is a phenomenon. So I get back to the Rosh. The Rosh was an import. And the importance is that he's totally fluent in the minhag of both the Sephardim and the Ashkenazim. And this is passed on to his son, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, who does something very novel. He takes all of the halachot and he puts them into four packages known as the Arba'at Turim. That's a phrase that comes out of the Choshen, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, that there were four rows. But he gives different nicknames to them. He calls one the Orach Chaim, one the Yeridea, one the Evin Ezer, one the Choshen Mishpat. So Orach Chaim is the laws of Brachot and Tfilah and Shabbat and Chagim. That's all Orach Chaim. Yeridea is what we call Isur V'Heter, that which is permissible and not permissible, whether it's in areas of Kashrut, whether it's in areas of Taharat HaMishpacha, whether it's in areas of Avelut, that's all Yeridea. That's what the guys learned for Smicha. And then there's Evin Ezer, those are issues of marriage, divorce, Chalitza, and things like that, Evin Ezer. And Dinei Mamonot is civil law, Dinei Mamonot, that's Choshen Mishpat. Fine, so these are the Arba Shulchan, the four sections of the tour. On these four sections of the tour, Rabbi Yosef Karo Now, he's born in Spain in 1489. He's a three-year-old child at the dying time of the expulsion, and they were expelled. And they were from the meager few who make it to Eretz Yisrael. So he makes it to Tzfat, but it was through Turkey, Constantinople, which is Istanbul today. So it took a long time, but he finally makes it to Tzfat. He writes a commentary on the tour, but it's not a commentary. It's an encyclopedic halachic work. There's no other word for it. Encyclopedia, it's like forerunner of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. And he goes through every view of the Rishonim, of the medieval greats, and he brings it down to some type of conclusion. And he calls it the Beit Yosef. Today, when you see Beit Yosef, you think Burger Ranch and Hashkocha on the hamburgers, right? Hashkachat Beit Yosef. But Beit Yosef is the classic work of Rabbi Yosef Karo. He then abbreviates the Beit Yosef, and he says, you know, Balabatim, they can't handle the Beit Yosef because they don't have all the background. So let's just prepare the table for the average layman, and that's the Shulchan Aruch. That becomes the Shulchan Aruch. So if you would go over to Rabbi Yosef Karo and give him a big Yashikayach for the Shulchan Aruch, he would be insulted. On this, he'd give me a Yashikayach. On the digest, on a manual for Balabatim, man, I wrote the Beit Yosef. Beit Yosef was his classic work. But what happened with the Shulchan Aruch, it was appropriate for Sfardi Minah. And that was in Sfat. Comes Rabbi Moshe Isserles in Krakow and puts the tablecloth on the Shulchan Aruch. That's what he calls it, the Mapach. And he Ashkenazizes it. He makes it compatible for Ashkenazim. And that's why Shulchan Aruch today has two authors. And the printers did a great job by printing Rabbi Yosef Karo in bold print and Rabma in Rashi print. So you know right away where you're going, from Krakow to Tzfat, Tzfat to Krakow. You see it optically, and you don't have to think twice. On the computer, it's different. Because when I print out things from Shulchan Aruch, and it's the Rama, it's the same font. So sometimes I will make it a little bit more miniature, just to show that the Rama is, it's not the Rabbi Yosef Karo. But in the standard prints of every Shulchan Aruch, you get the Rama in Rashi script, which already indicates you've moved from Tzfat to Krakow. So this Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, the tour, now brings the following in source number one. Tanya, it says in a brighter, Bepirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer is a Midrashic source. Rosh Chodesh Elul, Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Alei Eilai HaHara, go up to the mountain. That is now the third ascension of Moshe Rabbeinu to Har Sinai. Because the first time was Chag HaShavuot. Second time was the day after he shattered the Luchot, and this was now the 18th of Tammuz. Now is the third time. She'az Allah lekabel Luchot achonot. This is when he receives the command, P'sol lecha shnei Luchot avanim karishonim, chisel out the second time, the Luchot of the Ten Commandments. Ve'eviru shofar b'machaneh, and in order to guarantee that Am Yisrael knew that Moshe Rabbeinu was still up there, and let's not have the same mistake twice, what happened 80 days ago, on the 17th of Tammuz, so there will be a shofar that will be sounded. Moshe Allah lahar, shelo yidu od achar avodat gelilim. Ayin gimel means avodat zara, avodat gelilim. They shouldn't err once again. V'kadosh baruch hu nitale boto shofar. And a kadosh baruch hu, as if to say, also was raised. Now, kadosh baruch hu, you can't raise, you can't lower. So it's just what we say, as if to say, right? As if to say, Shenemar, Allah Elokim b'tru'ah. God ascended in the sound of a tru'ah. Lachain, therefore, hitkinu chazal, chachamim established. Now this is important. Hitkinu chazal. This is not some community in Morocco, in Yemen, in Hungary, where a minhag develops, and then as many minhagim catch fire, they turn out to have their own dynamics to them. Here, the Torah claims this goes back to the days of Chazal. When we say Chazal, Chachamim Zichronam Levracha, we're talking about time of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah until the end of the Gemara. So that's a few hundred years, Peseder. But that's called Takanat Chazal, somewhere there. Sheyu tokim b'Rosh Chodesh Elul b'chol shana b'shana. That on Rosh Chodesh Elul, we should blow shofar annually. V'chol ha-chodesh, and throughout the entire month, kedei lazhir Yisrael sheyasu tshuva. To stimulate a process. Because as anybody who's ever studied the laws of tshuva know, It's not what we call in Hebrew zveng v'gamalnu. It's not a one-shot deal. It's a process. Shenemar, as the Navi says in Amos, im yitaka shofar ba'ir ve'am lo yecheradu, as a question mark, if the shofar is sounded, and here the context is the sound of war, if they blow the sirens, does it not put people into a panic? Of course it should. Should it raise the levels of tension? Of course it should. And therefore, that's what we use. We use the shofar to raise the levels of tension. Ukidei l'arvev ha-satan, also to have the satan on Rosh Hashanah get mixed up and confused. One second, isn't it a month early? You know, I'm here on Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, which is Rosh Hashanah, to have every Baal Tokeya mess up. That's this Malach's job. But here we try to somehow deflect the Satan, and we're blowing a month early. So the Satan's going to scratch his head. So one second, why are they blowing now? I have only one question about this. You know, after 2,500 years, the Satan's not an idiot, and he figured out that, you know, that Rosh Chodesh Elul, we do this. But all right. V'chein noagim ba'ashkenaz. This is important. That the author of the Torah, who's brought up in Toledo, but the son of the Rosh, who hails from Ashkenaz, he's writing Ashkenazi minag. V'chein noagim ba'ashkenaz. Litkoa b'chol boker v'erev achar atfila. Now, I'm familiar with the source. I never in a million years saw any tkiat shofar at nighttime from a ma'ariv. Yet, the Torah is reporting that there was a minhag in Ashkenaz to blow the shofar not only in the morning but also at night. What's not mentioned here at all is the David Hashem Ori, Tilim Kavzayim, that we Ashkenazim have begun to add morning and evening from Rosh Chodesh Elul, and apparently it's not yet known to the Rosh or to the author of the Torah. V'yesh mi shemarbim lomar slichot v'tachnunim mirosh chodesh elul v'eilach. This is startling. And there are those who begin saying slichot from Rosh Chodesh Elul. What's that? You're sitting in Toledo, Spain. Doesn't everybody say slichot in the Sephardi world from Rosh Chodesh Elul? Apparently not. Apparently not. Where would I turn to get a little bit of a picture of saying slichot? Turn the page, please, to source number 4 on top. Of course, I would go to the Rambam, right? As far as we know, Rambam was a Sephardi, right? Because I had a great professor at YU, Rabbi Professor Meir Simcha Feldblum, Zichrono Lebracha, who said that the order of the Rambam is so perfect that you can assume that the book was written in Frankfurt. It was so orderly. But he said, and this is at YU, but we all know it was written in Brisk. We all know that. Of course, the Rambam was written on Egyptian soil in Fostat, which is old Cairo. So here the Rambam writes in source number 4 that a Kadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah takes every individual and takes every country, and takes the world at large, and puts everything on a scale. There are 3 different measurements being made here. 3 different measurements. One is on a personal level, one is on a communal level, and one is on a international level. International, the world. V'chein olam kulo. And it's interesting that 3 measurements are taken. And I once said at Drasha and Shul many years ago that this most probably answers the question why the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur said confession vidui 3 times. One for himself, and one for all of the Kohanim, and one for all of Klal Yisrael. One is personal, one is communal, or in the case of the Kohanim, tribal, the Shevet, and one is for the whole nation. So you have this triangular vidui. And here the Rambam says there's a triangular weighing in ceremony going on in Rosh Hashanah. If you have more zchuyot than avonot, you're written down l'chaim. If you have more chataim than zchuyot, you're written down, you're not going to make it through the year. And the same, the medina, and the same, the whole world. But what happens if you weigh in on the 50-50 line? 50% zakai, 50% chayav. Now, the statistical probability that's going to happen to everybody is zero. It's not close to zero. It's zero. You know, maybe one person out of 2 zillion, it comes out exactly, bidyuk, 50-50. Because the Rambam says the reason why we have a seret mei tshuva, it's pashut extra innings. It's to go into overtime. It's going to overtime to give us a little bit of a possibility in 10 days before Yom Kippur to somehow tip the scale. So that's for one person out of the whole nation. Rambam says we don't know what our score looks like. So don't go into Rosh Hashanah thinking you're a tzaddik, because you're not going to take Yom Neroim seriously. But don't go into Rosh Hashanah thinking that you're a Rosha either, because we're not Rishonim. So because we don't really know what the score is, consider yourself on the 50-50, 50% zakai, 50% chayav, and utilize the Aseret Mei Tshuva to its maximum. And that's why he says, excuse me, in the underline, Mipnei Inyan Zeh, Mipnei Inyan Zeh, because of this, Nagu Kol Beit Yisrael, Larbot B'Tzdaka V'Masim Tovim, V'Lasok B'Mitzvot Mirosh Hashanah V'Ad Yom Kippurim Yeter Mikol Hashanah. The custom is that from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur, Am Yisrael upgrades in Tzdaka, in Masim Tovim, in performance of mitzvahs. The point is, attempt to tip the scale. V'Nagu Kulam Lakum B'Laila B'Asara Yamim Eilu ולהתפלל בבתי כנסיות בדברי תחנונים ובכיבושים עד שיאור היום. And the custom is to get up in these 10 days at the end of the night, but before morning has started, and say, engage in tachnunim. This is what we call slichas. With this type of tefillah that's more of a cry than a bakasha, until the break of dawn. Ad sheyor hayom. This is what we know as slichas. And this is the ideal time of slichot, what's called ashmorat haboker. So, if you're familiar with the shtiblach in the Katamon, so to the right of the shtiblach there's a Sephardi shul, big sign on the door. Every morning slichot, 4:45 a.m. If anybody wants to go, say a Sephardi slichas. That's when they say slichas. And they don't finish at 5 after 5, after 20 minutes. They finish at 6 o'clock. It takes an hour and a quarter, every single day, for 40 days. Beautiful slichot. So the Rambam says slichot is for Aseret Mei Tshuva. That's all. So the Rosh and his son, the Tur, Rabbi Yaakov Ben Asher, that's what they're familiar with. But apparently a new minhag has kicked in. In my family, we use the phrase new minhag as an oxymoron. If it's new, it's not a minhag. If it's a minhag, it's not new. Minhag by definition means it's old. But all right, a new minhag kicks in that they expanded the saying of the slichot for the 40 days, which then took off on Sephardi tradition and became the minhag of Sephardim till this very day. But it wasn't always the Sephardi minhag. For example, the Yemenites, who follow the Rambam to the letter, they don't have slichot in the month of Elul at all. Just Aseret Mei Tshuva. So what about Ashkenazim? Do we have Aseret Mei Tshuva? Yes. But we also have a little bit of slichas before. So how much of a little bit of slichas before? The truth is, Ashkenazim have adopted the Rambam's position with a little bit of an add-on. See, what the Rambam said was that you say, and we're going to read the last two lines again of source number 4. V'nagu kulam lakum ba'layla ba'asara yamim eilu, in these 10 days, which he said the line before is Mei Rosh Hashanah v'ad Yom Kippur. You know what that means? According to the Rambam, this slichas is on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur for sure, and on Erev Yom Kippur. You know, Ashkenazim don't say slichot on Rosh Hashanah, nor on Erev Yom Kippur. And basically, this had to do with a custom that kicked in the 13th century by the Hasidei Ashkenaz, not to be confused at all with Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov of the modern Hasidic movement. But I'm talking about Rabbi Yehuda Hasid. There was a group of Kabbalists who were practicing halacha lefnim mishurat adin, above and beyond the call. And some of those things have filtered into our daily minhag, by the way. But one of their minhagim was that we don't do is to fast Aseret Yemei Tshuva. Not just Yom Kippur and Tzom Gedalia, but to fast. Now obviously it means they were able to eat at nighttime. You know, but they fasted Aseret Yemei Tshuva as part of the process of tshuva. That's not easy, but when you think about it, there are 4 days out of the 10 of Aseret Mitzvah, you're not allowed to fast. 40%. And that are the two, they are the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, it's Yom Tov, the other is this Shabbat Shuva, there's always a Shabbat Shuva, you're not allowed to fast. And there's a mitzvah to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. Now, I'm not a big machmer in many areas of Aloha, but on this one, you know, I go to town. It's a Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And I'll just say it for half a word, I've said this in a shir already, that the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, people think is that you should load up, so you should have extra supply in the system for Yom Kippur. It happens to be just the opposite. The more you ingest, if you overly eat on Erev Yom Kippur, you're going to have a difficult fast. And that is because the glucose levels go up, and then come the next day, the body is fighting for more, and you're going to feel it. And according to many poskim, that's precisely the desired effect of overeating on Erev Yom Kippur, so that you should feel the inui and fulfill the mitzvah of v'initem et nafshotechem. Feel it. Unlike what people seem to wish each other, have an easy fast. Have an easy fast is most probably, I don't want to say anti-halakha, but it's certainly non-halakha. The halakha does not agree with that greeting. You could say you can have a meaningful fast, but have an easy fast. There is a pill, it's a water retention pill that is sold over the counter for people who have difficulty fasting, and one of the brands is called Tzom Kal, easy fast. So I remember we lived in Ramot, so one of our Balabad families owned a pharmacy in the neighborhood, and I told her, I said, listen, only somebody who needs it, you sell it. You don't sell it to a perfectly healthy person. There's no reason to circumvent the mitzvah of the initem nashotarem. If somebody has difficulty fasting, okay, fine, I understand that. I'm not going to tell a person not to do that. But the phrase Tzom Kal is problematic. It's problematic. I once had a flight attendant on El Al asking me, how do you say Tzom Kal in English? Because she was going to make the announcement before getting off the plane, either before Yom Kippur, for Tisha B'Av, I think it was, whatever it was. And I just told her to say, have a meaningful fast. And
does that apply to all fasts?
Yeah, there's no... If there's a mitzvah fasting, so it's a takeoff on the mitzvah of inui. Yeah. But that doesn't mean on a other fast like some vidalia, you can't get up at 4 in the morning and have breakfast, you know, because then you would have an easier fast.
How would you say meaningful fast in Hebrew?
Yeah. That's tzom mo'il. Tzom mo'il. Mo'il. Right. That's the word. Mo'il, with an ayin. Tzom mo'il. Right. Anyway, what you see from here is that what the Torah, going back to this first side, what the Torah said that there's slichot. Some say yesh mi shemarbin lomar slichot v'tachnunim rosh chodesh elul ve'ela. That phrase in itself, the yesh mi, and there are some, indicates it's a minority opinion. It clearly was not widespread yet in the days of the Torah. Yesh mi, there are some who upgraded their slichos readings. Okay, and now we're going to get to what I consider the meat of this discussion. It's source number 2. Who are the Tshuvot v'Hanhagot, Volume Dalet? Who wrote the Tshuvot v'Hanhagot? Is a Gadol B'Torah, who passed away just a few years ago. He was one of the heads of the Edah Haredit. He lived in Har Nof and had a Torah center there. But he also served for a while in Johannesburg. And he was here in Eretz Yisrael before. I'm referring to Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Rav Moshe Sternbuch. Zichron Levracha, many tentacles of his family in Switzerland. Those who are familiar with the Sternbuch family, they're all cousins, they're all related. He was Adam Gadol, somewhat of a zealot, kana'i, in certain of the political issues, but that's not my discussion here today. And he reviews the minhagim of various parts of the calendar, and in this case, Takanat Tkiat Shofar B'Rosh Chodesh Elul U'B'Chol HaChodesh. That's interesting. The headline, Takanat Kiat Shofar B'Rosh Chodesh Elul U'B'Chol HaChodesh. Already telling you that there might be two things here. One is the institution of blowing shofar on Rosh Chodesh. That's institution number one. And institution number two is to continue blowing shofar throughout the month of Elul. It's not the same thing. And that's a big chidush. Na'agu kol Yisrael litkosh b'shofar b'chodesh elul midei yom b'yom b'yomo achar tefillah. It is customary amongst Am Yisrael to blow the shofar in the month of Elul daily after davening. Taf Shin Reish Taf. That's Tkiya Shvarim Terua Tkiya. Now, this is what Ashkenazim do. Sfaradim do not do this, but Sfaradim, in their saying of the Slichot for 40 days, so when they say the centerpiece of Slichas, which is the 13 attributes, Shlosh Levidot, one gentleman blows the shofar. And I can tell you from experience in Be'er Sheva, it is a very, very awesome experience of hearing the shofar go off as people, if you go to a Sfaradi shul and listen to Sfaradim say Shlosh Levidot on a daily basis during Tachnun, you'll really hear that this is, you know, charged. Hashem, Hashem, Kel, Rachum, Dechanun. Every word is said clearly, enunciated, loud, with a lot of passion and fervor. And at that time, the shofar is in the background. It's a very moving, very moving. Ashkenazim don't do this. We have the blowing. Velo niskar b'shas v'rav kadmonim. This minhag is not mentioned in the Gemara or in the kadmonim, the early ones, and that is the Rishonim, the medievals. Which means, he doesn't say, as the Tur mentioned, it was takanat chazal. Maybe the Tur didn't have a source for it either, but assumed that it dates back to the days of Chazal. Rav Sternbach says, no source. Ella, however, it says, the Ita, the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, what we read already in source number one, that Midrashic source, Shebrosh Chodesh Elul Lamar Kadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe, such and such and such. Therefore, the Medrash continues, but it's not the Medrash that actually said this. Nachein itkinu Chazal Sheyu Tokim B'Shofar Brosh Chodesh Elul B'Chol Shana V'Shana. Question is this part of the text of the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, or what generation did that medrash come about? Because some midrashim have saying some chazal, but they were edited later on after the days of the Gemara, and hence this might even be a late source. Nir'em midvarav, what seems to appear from this line, hitkinu chazal shiu tokim b'shofar b'rosh chodesh, on rosh chodesh, the takanat chachamim aita b'rosh chodesh elul bulvad. There was an institution from the days of Chazal to blow shofar a month before Rosh Hashanah on Rosh Chodesh Elul, but only on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Chayin Ita, it's also found in another sefer called Datskinim Balei HaTosafot Ala Torah. It's found in any Mikraot Gedolot Chumash. You can see this. Shetokim b'Rosh Chodesh Elul, b'Rosh Chodesh, aval litkoa b'chol haChodesh, but to blow shofar throughout the month of Elul. Lo nagu b'chol makom. This was not universally accepted, even amongst Ashkenazim. V'chein Shulchan Aruch lo hevi minhag zeh. Rabbi Yosef Karo does not bring this minhag. It's the Ramah that brings the minhag later, but not Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Karo does not bring this minhag at all. V'chein yadua sheha'admor hakadosh mikotsk. Rabbi Menachem Mendel Zatzal. This is the Kotzke Rebbe, the famous Kotzke Rebbe. Lo taku etzlo b'chodesh elul. By him, they didn't blow during the month of Elul, but it seems that on Rosh Chodesh they did. We said that during the month of Elul they didn't blow. Rak hachidushe harim, that's Rabbi Yitzchak Meir, Acharav, the first Rebbe of Ger, hinhig litkoa kol hachodesh kiminhag Ashkenaz. Al kol panem ikar chiyuv ketakanat chachamim haya birosh chodesh Elul bilvad. Period. So just a word about the Hasidic dynasties. So you have the Baal Shem Tov, and his student was the Maggid from Mezrich. This is all yet in the Ukraine. And then third generation moves on to Poland. The Noam Elimelech, Rebbe Melech from Lizhansk, and then passes down to his student, who's the Chayza from Lublin. Where are all my Poland graduates? They should know this by heart already. And he was the forerunner of the Heilige Yid, Hayudi HaKadosh, Rav Yitzchak Yosef Yitzchak, who then was the forerunner of the next one who had the same name but no family connection, and he was known as Rav Yosef from Psishra. Rav Yosef Yitzchak was from Psishra, and the next one came Menachem Mendel from Psishra, and then the one afterwards came Rav Menachem from Kotsk, and Kotsk was the forerunner of Ger. That's how it all lines up. So the Kotzker Rebbe did not have the blowing of Shofar during the month of Elul, but for the Rosh Chodesh, yes. But his own student, who becomes the successor, the Rabbi Yitzhak Meir, the first Rebbe of Ger, he's the grandfather of the Sfat Emet, he already blew Shofar in his Beis Medrash throughout. In other words, he capitulated to the Minhag. Achein nagu ba'ashkenaz l'tkoa kol ha'chodesh. And it came the Minhag that in Ashkenaz we blow the entire month. Ve'bemet hatur siman tafkuf peyayin hevi et divrei pirkei Rabbi Eliezer v'garas be'y chetiknu l'tkoa b'chol ha'chodesh. In other words, now there's a whole issue about the version, the girsa, the nusach, the version of this medrash, the way the Tur wrote it, and the way we have it in the Sefer, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, it's not really saying the same thing. Does it mean the just on Rosh Chodesh or throughout? Ava pshuto hayinu haynu b'Rosh Chodesh elul davka. The simple reading is that the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer speaks of a blowing of the Shofar on Rosh Chodesh. And then he says, I think I saw it in another Sefer too. And now he goes on to explain. V'ho'il, the next paragraph. The Ikara Takana Itab Rosh Chodesh Elul, the principal institution, primary institution, was to blow Shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Al Korchach Hinhagti Bekilateinu, therefore in my community, says Rav Sternbuch, the Rosh Chodesh Elul Dafka, on Rosh Chodesh Elul, I didn't just blow Tkiyah Shvarim Trua Tkiyah, but I blew Tkiyah Shvarim Trua Tkiyah, Tkiyah Shvarim Tkiyah, Tkiyah Trua Tkiyah, Tafshin Taf, Tafresh Taf, what we blow, the set of 10, after Malchiyot, after Zichronot, after Shofarot, that's the package of 10 that we blow during Shmoneh Esrei. So that's like the whole package. Why? Sharei Yesh Safek, there's a doubt, what is the Tua, what is the biblical Tua? The Tua never uses the word Shvarim. It says, Yom Tua Yelechem. So there was a question whether the Tua is a broken sound that we call Shvarim, do, 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 or it's like more of a machine gun sound that we call Tua, do, 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 do. And then just to get our act together and be on the safe side, we do both. We do this and that and both. That's why we have a Shvarim Teruah together, and that's why we have a Shvarim separate and we have a Teruah separate. And just to make matters more complicated, when we have the Shvarim Teruah together, is that supposed to be hyphenated as one sound, or is it supposed to be sound like two independent sounds? And what's the difference? The difference is, does the Baal Tekeah take a breath after he does the Shvarim before he does the Teruah? And how does the Baal Tekeah call it? You know how many Bali Makri don't know this halacha? Do you say Shvarim Teruah, or do you say Shvarim Teruah? Come to Ol Nechama, you'll hear it. You have to know how to call it properly. Right? When you sit by Rav Lichtenstein Zichron Lebrach in the Gush, you learn how to call it. He was the Makri. The problem, thank God I was never a Baal Tekeah for a Varn, because my friend Rav Ezra Bick was, and he had to blow 350 tekiyot for a Varn to be satisfied with the 100 tekiyot. And that was 19, first Rosh Hashanah in the Gush. It was like unbelievable. So that's why you can have different versions of what is the Teruah of the Torah. So you want to be on the safe side. And there's a special oral tradition, halacha l'Moshe M'Sinai, that every single Teruah on Rosh Hashanah is sandwiched with a Tekiyah. So that's why every type of Teruah has a Tekiyah before and a Tekiyah after. And Tekiyah is the straight sound, as you know. So Rav Sternberg says, Sharei Yesh Safek Ma'u Teruah U'L'Rambam V'od Harbei Katmonim Sfeged O'aitehi. According to Rambam and other Rishonim, this is a biblical Safek, and therefore you have to go to Chumrah, you have to do each one just to make sure you got it right. Valkorcho, therefore, ra'ui b'Rosh Chodesh Elul shehu ikar hatakana litkoa, the whole line, tkiyah shvarim teruah, tkiyah shvarim teruah, tkiyah teruah, tkiyah, shetehei kalacha. In other words, Rav Sternbuch says, this primary minhag of blowing shofar, not for the month of Elul, but for Rosh Chodesh Elul, should be blown in the proper way as if it's a Rosh Hashanah tkiyah. And if it's a Rosh Hashanah tkiyah, you have to blow every variation of a teruah. V'omnam, however, b'chol ha'chodesh, throughout the month, somchim al Rabbeinu Tam. You can rely on Rabbeinu Tam, that's Rashi's grandson, the spirit that he holds, the bidi avad yotzim tamid b'tkiyah shvarim teruah tkiyah gam midoraita. Which means, if a person just heard tkiyah shvarim teruah tkiyah once, two, three times, those three lines, you, according to Rabbeinu Tam, you fulfilled your obligation of tikiat shofar. Because there was an idea that the word Torah appears twice. Three times rather. Twice in the context of Rosh Hashanah and once in the context of Yovel. Chazal put them all together. You have to hear three truot. That's all. Three truot? How come we listen to 100? Because the three became 100. Three actually expanded to 30. How did three become 30? Because tkiah shvarim truat tkiah is a line. That's already four kolot. Times three is 12. And then tkiah shvarim truat is three. Times three is nine. That's another nine. And tkiah truat tkiah is times three is another nine. So nine and 12 is 30. So those are the 30 sounds that we sound off before musaf. And if I have to blow shofar, and anybody has to blow shofar at the home for anybody or at the hospital, you don't blow 100 sounds, you blow 30. And the person's yaitza. That's all. But that's according to the Rambam, because we did every variation of a trua. But if we followed Rabbeinu Tam, we'd get away with 12. Just the first set of tkiah, shvarim, truah, tkiah, times three, and that's it.
Even
Rosh Chodesh? Yeah, Rosh Chodesh is a minute, that's for sure. Rosh Chodesh is a minute. So it's a minute, it doesn't make a difference. But I'm talking about Rosh Hashanah now. You would even be Yotzeh, going to Rabbeinu Tam. And why do I say that? Because when you start getting into the later Tkiot, and all of it is just add-on, it's extra, the good reasons for extra. So those Tkiot that are in Shmon Esrei have a very, very serious reason, because it becomes a incorporation of the mitzvah of Shofar with Tefillah. That, well, maybe we'll get to it today, if not then next week. So that's an important ingredient in why we blow Shofar in the Chazarat HaShatz, and some people blow it even in the silent Shmon Esrei. But the Tekiot after Ankel Akenu, just to be Mashlim, just to make the 100. You know, you get through, and you've only done 60. When you finish Shmon Esrei, you've done 60 kolot. So if you blew in the silent Shmon Esrei, you've actually done 90. So you still have to make up another 10. But going to Ashkenazim, you have to make up 40. So what we do is we blow another 10 by Kaddish, and another 30 after Ankel Akenu.
Real difference that you blow in the silent Shmon Esrei
episode of
the
shots. Alright, so that's a shear in itself. I'm not going to go, I'll just say that the fulfillment of the whole concept of the blowing of the shofar in Shmon Esrei is a tzibur blowing. The tzibur is blowing, the community. So it's not a private matter at all. That's all. And the only reason that some communities blew in the silent Shmon Esrei, to lighten up the burden of the Baal Tekeah, because it spreads it differently. It makes it, he doesn't have to do 40 kolot after Musaf. He only has 10 left, you know. But there's a real technical problem, because you have to wait till everybody finishes. How can you do that? Everybody davens at a different pace. It becomes a real problem. So a lot of shuls don't even bother with that, and there's a lot of justification. What happened that time in the Gush with the Rav Lichtenstein, and it was really at the very, very end. So Rav Lichtenstein was such a stickler for perfection that if the tekiah wasn't a perfect line, a linear call voice, perfect, with no zigzagging at all, no that's already disqualified by Rav Lichtenstein. It was a waver. No waver in the tekiah. It had to be from beginning to the end. Plus, each line, the line had to be perfect. So if you messed up the tekiah at the end of a line, he brought you back to the beginning of the line. That's how strict he was. So here, Rav Ezra Bick was already really towards the finish line. He had already blown over 300 kolot to satisfy Rav Lichtenstein, which was no simple matter. And everybody standing there, perfect silence. You've got hundreds of people, you know, in this packed base medrash. And he blew that final, one of the last kiyot after the tekiah shvarim truah. And it sounded like this. And everybody's waiting. Everybody's waiting. Rav Lichtenstein's like deep in his, and he goes, and the whole Beis Medrash goes, ah. Oh. And Ezra Bick goes, like, I tried, and he made him do the whole line again. I loved Rav Lichtenstein, adored him and everything. And these are the things that made Rav Amital plots also. But you have to understand where Rav Aaron was coming from. A world of absolute perfection. I mean, Rav Aaron that year delivered a sicha at night of Rosh Hashanah before Baruch Hu for an hour and a half. And Rav Amital passed by me while I was sitting, and he looked at me and he says, you could have said it all in 10 minutes. I said, you're right, but not in that language. for sure that. Besed. So everybody's got their styles. Okay. So now let's take a look at Rav Shtrembuch continues. In that line where he talked about Rabbeinu Tam, he says, "V'omnam b'chol ha'chodesh samchim Rabbeinu Tam, the sphere related to the Yavad yotzim tamid b'tkiyah shvarim t'ruat kiyah gam l'doraita. Al korchak therefore kishenu ela minhag." But it's not a din. In other words, he says the idea of blowing shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul, he says that's a halacha, it's a takanat chachamim. No different, let's say, than lighting Hanukkah candles or reading the Megillah. But blowing the shofar throughout the month of Elul, that's a minhag, that's a custom. So mekilim tufa, you can be mekel. You know, the tekiyos don't have to be perfect. Aval b'Rosh Chodesh, shechiyuvei tvei, the obligation is much greater. Lo nahagnu lakel. We didn't conduct ourselves leniently. In other words, we really wanted to make sure that the kiyot were perfect and they should be proper and in the proper number as well. How did they blow? It worked out okay, but I got the tekiyos out. It was the first day, and I remember I did not waver that much, but it wasn't 100% perfect.
How many? No,
we just did tekiyah shvarim through tekiyah, that's all. Nobody does it like this. What Rav Shtrembuch is saying, I never saw a shul that did it. Never saw a shul that on Rosh Chodesh blew three lines of the 10 kolot. Never saw it in my life. Now he writes, Ubesefer minhagei Frankfurt. This I say in honor of my wife and my sister-in-law, my father-in-law, Zecharin Levrocha, who I remember when he was 75 years old, we bought him the book, Minhag Frankfurt. It was a pretty big book. And we told them at the time that the Frankfurt Jews stayed 10 minutes after Har Sinai to receive the Minhag Frankfurt. So he argued and he said it's not true. He said they came 10 minutes earlier, before Matan Torah. I got the yekis to get it late. With a sefer Minhagei Frankfurt Ita, and in the book Minhag Frankfurt, it says, Shebechol Chodesh Elul Nohagu Litkoa Tkiya Shvarim Trua. It's brought down in the Minhag Frankfurt that in a Rosh Chodesh they actually did this. But he says they wrote it for all of Chodesh Elul, not just for Rosh Chodesh. All of Chodesh, Shebechol Chodesh Elul. Achein Minhag Yisrael, the Minhag is Rak Tkiyah Shvarim Teruah Tkiyah, what we do. Aval Etzleinu, but by me, he says, Rav Shtrembuch, Nahagti Lachmir B'Rosh Chodesh Levad. That's all. I took upon myself just on Rosh Chodesh. And what's interesting, I say again, he has Frankfurt roots, but he deviated. And he just held the line for Rosh Chodesh because he felt that that was the principal takana, and the rest of Rosh Chodesh, Chodesh Elul was just the minhag, and so on. I have to ask my friends from Zurich what they do in two of the shuls that are reincarnations of Frankfurt, so I can find out. What was
that? They actually did 30 codes.
There you go. So Jerry tells us now, Jerry Shatzkis tells us, that he was just there. Who was there? You were there?
No, I was there the Shabbos. Okay. Sunday morning.
So Sunday morning, they blew the 30 kolot. They blew the whole set. They blew the set.
At the early minyan or in the hotel?
No, in the hotel.
In the hotel? In
the early minyan.
It's not early minyan.
Where?
In
Kibbutz Lavi.
Yeah.
So I have Alta Yekis there. Wow.
They want you to get your money's worth, Jerry. They want you to get your money's worth.
Okay. There is a shul. There's a Rab Bamberger, Rab Bamberg in Bnei Brak, who has gone on a life's work of restoring Minhag Frankfurt the way it was here in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, it's a lost cause. But no, I say it not pejoratively, because it's just not going to happen. But he's got followers. I don't want to say chassidim, but he has followers. Really, I learned this from one of our good members in Shul, Eliezer Jesselson, who's familiar with it. He once showed me some article from this Rav Bamberger. So you see people are diehards, you know, just to keep it going. But here in Eretz Yisrael, what we are witnessing is the merger of minhagim. That's what we're witnessing. I would even tell you that we took a bold stand this week in Ol Nechama, and we are moving to the slichus of the Kibbutz Adati that was published by Kibbutz Ein HaNetziv, that there's a certain amount of brevity that's helpful for slichus, that people don't have a clue what they're saying, but also the inclusion of some of the Sephardi Piyutim. We didn't go the full way that Rav Gisser from Ofra went, but there he had a school, an ulpana, the students of Edot HaMizrach and Ashkenaz, and the attempt was to balance it so everybody should feel happy, and it's actually working out nicely. And this, I think, in 50 years, is going to be the Slichus here in Eretz Yisrael, because we have Piyutim that are part of what we call the Zemer Yisraeli. Everybody knows them already. And after starts teaching a shul, Adon HaSlichot, people know this. They hear it on radio, and that's a great piyut. Or as we even did in Be'er Sheva, in Young Israel, before Nila, we did the piyut, now I'm going to forget it. First, the piyut of that the Sfardim say before Nila, Kel Nora Alila. Kel Nora Alila. Nan Hamse la nomin Silicha. Nanananananan. Beyet Anila. Nanananananan. And we did it. And we did it because we had Sfaradim and Shul too. And it gave them a feeling that, you know, we recognize that, you know, your minag, your nusach is important. And it should be preserved even in the context of an Ashkenaz Shul. That's only here in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Goren tried to make a minig achid, but was not successful, because it really ended up what we call today nusach svard, which is really Ashkenaz that chassidim daven. That's what it is. But that's what he did. That's the official siddur. But if you ask me in practice what goes on, usually the majority of the fellows who come to shul in a particular base, that's what it is. And in more often it's Edot HaMizrach. More often than not, this is my own experience, it's Edot HaMizrach, because a lot of the Sfardim are in the army, and they go to shul, even those who don't wear kippot during the day. But they'll come in the morning to daven. Slichus, nothing to talk about. And I saw this once in a base in the Arava, on Tisha B'Av, and I went to the Chadar Ochel at 6 in the evening to see how many Chayalim are eating dinner. At 6 in the evening, there were a handful of Chayalim Chayalot. And it came for Mincha time at 8 o'clock, the Beit Knesset was packed. And this was a base that you didn't have many Shomrei Shabbat. Packed. And they're asking for Talis and Tefillin. And they're fasting. And I had a few minutes to talk to them between Mincha and Maariv. And I said, in Chutz La'aretz, somebody who's not fundamentally a Shomrei Shabbat doesn't even, forget about that he's not fasting on Tisha B'Av, he doesn't even know that it's Tisha B'Av today. And here, listen, Baruch Hashem, and you know, and they thought, of course it's Tisha B'Av, and what's the question, you know? Tisha B'Av, you fast, no? So, with regard to what goes on in the bases, many of the bases have Slichot throughout Chodesh Elul, because it's the Chevra, they want it. I once came early to the when I used to give shurim in the Chatzirim, in the Air Force Base near Be'er Sheva, and I was there once for Slichus in the morning, and they kibitzed and they wanted to invite me to be the chazan. They figured, what is this Ashkenazi, you know? And I said, I can do it because of the yeshiva in Be'er Sheva. I learned it. Okay. Let's just look at, so what does he write? So he brought the minhag Frankfurt, and then he says in the next paragraph, there's another reason why we blow in the month of Elul. The beginning of our concern for a difficult moment. It's supposed to throw you into a frenzy about the Day of Judgment. ובחרו יום אחד הוא ראש חודש אלול. ואם אמת כן, יש בזה מעין מצוות עשה לתקוע בעת צרה, אבל זהו חידוש גדול. What is he saying now? It's also, ראש חודש אלול is the kickoff of the season of Yom Neroim. And we get to Yom Neroim, we get to the piyut of Tana Tokif, Kedushat Hayom. You know, you don't have to know a lot of Hebrew to know what's up for grabs. מי יחיה, מי ימות. Mi bekitzo, mi lo bekitzo. So it's not just who's going to live, who's going to die, but who's going to have an untimely death. Mi lo bekitzo. Mi b'mayim, mi b'esh, mi b'rash, mi b'magifa, mi b'cheriv, in war, who's going to fall in a war, pigua. Mi b'chaya, Israeli driver, right? That's what a chaya is. Do you have any other definition? What's a chaya? Israeli driver. You laugh, but more people fell on the roads here than in all the wars put together. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people go in different ways. And that's up for grabs. Rosh Hashanah Yikotevun, V'yom Tzom Kippur Yechatemun. So this is Yom HaDin. And comes Rosh Chodesh Elul, you know, people start shuddering and shivering. And so it's an Eitzara for a person. And Sternberg says that the Rambam believes that when there's an Eitzara, there's a mitzvah to blow. To blow, the Torah says, Chatzotzot, trumpets. So there is an idea of blowing be'etzara. So he says, you know, this might even smack of a biblical idea of being fulfilling the mitzvah of blowing, of sounding out the trua on Rosh Chodesh Elul, because it's a Yom Tzara. It's a Yom Tzara. And you see, for, he follows up by saying, you know, maybe not, because many Rishonim say that that mitzvah is only with the trumpets in the time of the Beit HaMikdash, Chatzotzot, and we're using a shofar, it's not the same. But nevertheless, you see that, and he even says himself, this is a big chiddush, this is wild. In English, I would say, this is a wild idea. But he suggests it anyway. He suggests it anyway as a possibility. Now, what's interesting is that Rosh Chodesh itself, according to Rabbi Yehuda Levi in the Kuzari, Rosh Chodesh, there are three times during the year that we're supposed to take stock of our actions. One is Yom Kippur, one is Rosh Chodesh, one is Shabbat. Shabbat. Now Shabbat was never designed to be a Yom Kippara, as a day of atonement, but nevertheless it was a day of taking stock. 6 days, Yom Shvi, stop, turn around, see what went on, and then next day you move on. But Rosh Chodesh, excuse me, is a Zman Kapara. We say in Musaf, Rosh Chodeshim Lamcha Natata, Zman Kapara. Which means it's a type of Yom Kippur. And from here was born the idea of Yom Kippur Katan, mini Yom Kippur. But that's not on Rosh Chodesh. When those people who fast Yom Kippur Katan, on Erev Rosh Chodesh. So they Slichas by Mincha, they Slichas by Mincha of Yom Kippur Katan, and some people fast. But there are a lot of people who say the slichot, by the way. If you go to the Kotel, on Erev Rosh Chodesh, you can pick up a minion that will incorporate the slichot for Erev Rosh Chodesh. So why do they do that? Because there's a fundamentally an Isur of fasting, the prohibition of fast on Rosh Chodesh. Prohibition of fasting. Some say it's only rabbinic. Some say, according to Rambam, it's Doraita, it's biblical. You're not allowed to fast on Rosh Chodesh. So in order to make up that fasting, they move it back by one day. We move back to Erev Rosh Chodesh. But Rosh Chodesh is a day of taking stock. And with regard to Rosh Chodesh Elul, there was a minhag that on Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul, people went to the cemeteries for to kever avot. They went to the cemeteries. A lot of people go to the cemeteries. You can see Kakim by Har Menuchot on Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul. Eged will announce extra buses going to Har Menuchot. And a lot of people don't even know what to do there. What are you going to do? It's not a yard site. You say a kel mole rachim, you say kaddish. Ost sabaitin, as they say, to cry yourself out. Well, you can go to shul that. You don't have to go to a cemetery for that. So the real reason is, it's to remind you. You need a reminder of what this is all about. Adam yisodo me'afar v'sofo me'afar. More so on Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul. More so on Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul. The other time that the Halacha mentions it, by the way, is on Tisha B'Av. There's a minig on Tisha B'Av also to go to Kivrei Avos. Well, a lot of people don't have that minig. Having said what I just said, on Erev Rosh Chodesh, it's Yom Kippur Katan, but it's really Yom Kippur. This is what happened in Ashkenaz with Slichas. We have 10 days, and people took, the Hasidi Ashkenaz took upon themselves the 10 days of the fast. 10 days of fasting, except that we said that 40% you don't fast. So they moved back the 4 days before Rosh Hashanah. That we should have 4 days of slichas, which meant 4 days of fasting. In essence, they adopted the Rambam's position that there were 10 days of slichas, not like the Sfaradim would do the whole month, except that in 4 of those days, it's not really slichas. To Rosh Hashanah, we don't say slichas. Erev Yom Kippur, it's abbreviated, very short slichas. And on Shabbat Shuvah, there's no slichas. So you certainly can't fast those 4 days. So those who wanted to fast the entire 10 days moved it back for 4 days. And then came a different add-on, grafted independently, that the Ashkenazim will always begin Slichas on Matzah Shabbos. Now this year it works out. If Rosh Hashanah comes out on Thursday, so you can have full 4 days of Slichas if you begin Matzah Shabbos, which is Sunday, Yom Aleph, you have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Wednesday is Erev Rosh Hashanah. You get your 4 days. But when Rosh Hashanah comes out on a Monday or Tuesday, and sometimes it could, so then you have to move back the whole Slichas the week before, because if you want to start a Matzah Shabbos, and get at least 4 days in before Rosh Hashanah. You're not going to have that if Rosh Hashanah falls out on a Monday or Tuesday. So then we get extra Slichas. We say Slichas for the whole week, and for the next day, Sunday, or Sunday and Monday, depending on when Erev Rosh Hashanah is. But this year, it turns out, we have the bare minimum. We have the four. So that's why if you have a booklet of Slichas, and it says, Yom Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi, the next one is going to be, it's not even going to be Revi. It's going to be Erev Rosh Hashanah already. So there's going to be a whole section of Slichas this year that we're not saying. That's okay. We'll do okay without, you know, it's, nobody's going to lose any, nobody's going to lose sleep over it. But this was all about. So what does the Matzah Shabbos have to do with this? So the first piyut that we say is B'motza'ei menucha ki damnucha t'chila. We come to you on Matzah Shabbos. Because there's a lot that's embedded in Matzah Shabbos. You know, I'm going to begin with this theme next week. B'motza'ei menucha ki damnucha t'chila. Because so much of the coming of Eliyahu Navi is a Matzah Shabbos theme. There are a lot of many Matzah Shabbos themes that were pashut forged together, and it just became an opportune moment. Why we do Kiddush Levana, Matzah Shabbos, many things we do specifically on Matzah Shabbat, and that became the whole question. Do you start at midnight? Can you do it a little earlier than midnight? As many of us have become a little bit lax, and we start at 11, we start at 10, we start at 10:30, whatever. But I remember Slichas in Borough Park in 1962, 63, and 64, and 65, when we moved to Borough Park from Washington Heights, and my father, in his great wisdom, Olav Shalom, said, Moshe Kosevitzky is not getting any younger. And you know what? He was right. He was right. And we did what we call chaparayim. We grabbed what we can grab, and went to hear Moshe Kosevitzky at 1 in the morning until 4 a.m. 4 a.m. And he wasn't through at 3:30. He still had to do Aneinu and Misratza Barachmim, these classic pieces, and 1,700 people didn't budge to Moshe Kosevitzky. But you know, in America, Sunday is Shabbat Sheni Shel Goliot. So nobody works, so you can schluff away on Sunday. You can do that. Couldn't pull that off here, for sure not. Okay, so we'll begin with this in Mitzvah next week. Say that. Say that. Yes.